Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, listeners. This is Patty Black bringing the good news show to you. We are back and we're going to have a fabulous show this week. We are continuing with tips of living a healthy lifestyle. We're going to have some interesting guests later in the show. Peter Savoni. He's a professional chef, restaurant consultant, and educator. He has a terrific story. He's vegan over 10 years, and he's experiencing abundant health. We're also going to have a very sweet and interesting guest from Soli Organic Ice Cream. So that's exciting, and they're going to be on at around 6:20 this morning. I want to thank all of our loyal listeners for sending us emails and discussing the show via email and giving tips and feedback. We do enjoy that. And this week we have a 5-star rating, so I want to share that with you. That's the good news for us. So this morning we have an interesting topic, and I am on air with Sherry, and she's going to tell us the topic.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Patty.
Good morning.
I want to say a special good morning to my sister who's listening from Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, and all her friends that are on board listening to us. And I want to say a special good morning to our friends listening out in L.A., Nancy and all her friends. Thank you, girls, for listening to us. And I do want to say also thank you for the 5-star ratings that we're getting, because that's what motivates us to bring to you the best that we can with our topics, and that we know that you're enjoying what we're talking about. So some of the things that we're going to talk about within the next couple of weeks are spirituality, harmony, self-discovery, goals, fulfillment, growth, love, success, happiness, dreams, and gratitude. And you can have and be and do anything that you want in this life. If you want things that you have never had, you have to do things that you have never done. And, you know, we were talking about healthy lifestyles and living a healthy life. And healthy relationship is what came to mind for me today. I was inspired to talk about love today. I went to this great meditation the other night, and I wanted to share some of the things that really resonated with me. So, you know, being in a relationship for me reveals to me who I am. And that's all my assets and all my character defects. And, you know, and that's the good part, because it gets, it lets me take a look at who I am. And you know, in being in a relationship, you know, it's making sure that I am creating a healthy me first. And you can't fully love another unless you love yourself first. So if you put yourself first in loving yourself, nurturing yourself, honoring what you want, and making your happiness number one priority, we're better able to love others, and we love deeper. And we love others to the degree that we love ourselves. And I found that to be really interesting, because we love others to the degree that we love ourselves. And I know a lot of people that are out there that they do not think of themselves first. They have, you know, their family comes first, their kids come first. And there is that part. It's not a selfish thing, but there is that part of us that we need to take care of ourselves. And when we take care of ourselves first, boy, we open up to the world and we become a shining light.
Well, there's a lot in that statement of taking care of ourselves, Sherry, because you really need to learn about yourself in order to take care about your to take care of yourself. So it's really looking at your inner self, knowing your vulnerabilities, knowing your strengths, knowing your weaknesses, knowing your inadequacies, knowing your achievements. It's really just looking at who you are and the whole gamut of emotions, and then being able to take care of those options and take care of yourself with those.
All right. So the first step is just in knowing, you know, and really wanting to take a look and know who we are, because I think a lot of people just don't even want to look at that part. You know, they just want to, you know, shove it under the carpet and, you know, just they don't want to know why they react certain ways or who they are. And, you know, as I had said last week, loving and accepting who you are is happiness. We always seek acceptance. And when we deny ourselves that, life gets twisted. Our attention gets stuck into a void inside of ourselves, leaving us with nothing of ourselves left to give. So when we are full of love, we feel complete inside. And that's where we all strive to get to, that feeling of fullness and feeling love inside. And a loving heart is where no words can go. And when the heart is empty, the mind can't rest. And that's when we get into trouble. You know, like our addictions come out, and our gambling and our drugs, alcohol, shopping, food. And
the obsessive thoughts.
Obsessive thoughts, absolutely. Big. Yeah. And, you know, we're all looking for a loving heart, and that is, you know, loving for our coworkers, our neighbors, our family, our loved ones. And, but first, you know, what I need is I need to have a quality relationship with myself. If that isn't working, can I really have a quality relationship with others?
Well, it's that's a good thought. When you think of relationships, you have ultimately have three types of relationships. One is with ourselves, and then one is with others, and how we project to others, and who the person we are to others is not the same person that we are to ourselves. When we're in a crowd or in the engaging in a relationship, whether it be a friendship or more, you're putting on a different personality because you're protecting your heart. And then the third type of relationship is your relationship with the universe or your higher power, God, whichever you choose to call it. We have those three types of relationships, and if you're not in tune with the relationship with yourself, it's not going to be harmonious with the other relationships. In other words, if you really know yourself and you know what triggers you have or what buttons you have, then you can recognize them when you're engaging in a relationship with somebody else or just struggling with the life forces if things aren't going your way. And if you know what your buttons are, you can control how you react to it by not reacting and just keep yourself in peace. And I really think that that's what creates harmony in your life. Really being aware with yourself.
Right. That's beautiful, Patty. You know, for myself, I know what I need to feel good about myself. And if I'm off mentally, physically, and spiritually, I know it's time to get back to basics. And I take like an inventory of myself. And I look at, you know, am I eating healthy? And if I've swayed off of a little bit and I'm in another track of like eating some of the foods that I used to eat, I know it's time to get like back to what really works for me and get back to being healthy and get rid of the, you know, the toxic foods or whatever that I am eating. And that really works for me to get, you know, to get back into balance. And, you know, I look at if I'm getting enough sleep. And I never realized how important sleep was. I used to live on 4 or 5 hours of sleep a night, burn the candle from both ends. And I was proud of it. Stay up as late as I could at night, you know. And now I'm more aware of getting like 7 or 8 hours sleep at night, and it's so healing to sleep. It's so beautiful. And exercise is also something that I need. It's important for me to nurture myself. It's something I do for me, and I know when I've missed more than 3 or 4 days. And I know when I've missed more than 3 or 4 days, and I'm not feeling good about myself if I'm not exercising. So I have to push myself out there, and it only takes me one day, and then I'm back. You know, being spiritually fit is probably the most important of all these things for me. And spirituality doesn't mean religion. I need to connect to my inner source. And prayer and meditation is how I do that. Cleaning up my inner world and knowing and experiencing who I am through meditation makes me more comfortable with myself. And it takes patience. All the time it takes a lot of patience. You know, every time you think that you're going to get it, and you've got to get patience and more patience. But you have to stick with it. And it's a journey. And it's doing something for myself daily. Meditation is the first step to healing and being healthy inside.
Also, exercise is also something that is important to me, and I need to nurture myself. You know, it's something that I do for me. And I don't know if I said this already, but I'm going to repeat it. And I know when I've missed more than 3 or 4 days of exercise, I'm not feeling good about myself. So then I have to push myself out there, and it takes me like 1 day, and then I'm back, and I'm back on track. And these are just some of the things that I need to keep my center. And being spiritually fit is probably the most important of all of these for me. And spirituality doesn't mean religion. I need to connect with my inner source, and prayer and meditation is how I do that. And cleaning up my inner world and knowing and experiencing who I am through meditation makes me more comfortable with myself. And it takes patience. Believe me, it's, you know, each time that I do it, I think, you know, you still think, is this it? Am I, you know, and I got to be more patient each time. And it's all the time that you just have to be patient with it and just sit with it and be with it and get to know what you're thinking and if you're, you know, let your thoughts go. And just being with yourself at that time is really important. So, you know, for me, I have to stick with it. And it's a journey. It's doing something for myself daily. And meditation is the first step to healing inside and being healthy inside.
Well, meditation is, it takes practice for some, because you're really slowing down your thoughts and getting to complete nothingness in order to be at the perfect point of meditation. And then when you're at the nothingness, you have thoughts that come into your mind and you just let them go. And then they come back and you let them go. But you're really trying to just slow things down, almost be at a stop or a standstill.
Exactly.
And that's there are healing qualities to being in that state. And then you hear the lower voice, which is your higher power. So it's an amazing art, and it's a very healthy thing to do. And studies have shown that meditation twice a day is a lot more beneficial than just once a day. So the people who have mastered it are doing it at least twice a day, once in the morning, once at night. It's an interesting art.
Mm-hmm. It really is. And, you know, you think that you don't have the time. Your life is so, you have such a busy schedule. And if you just make the time to do that, you know, we can see how much it improves in our life. Now, if I have time, I would like to read something that is on meditation from John Roger.
No, we do have time.
Okay, so he says, it becomes a hard life when we pray to God for all sorts of help, but we won't be quiet. Sit back and listen for the answers God provides. Don't dominate the conversation. Be silent and listen a little. In other words, meditate. Quiet down and observe your life. It is rare in meditation that you will hear anything. And when you do, more often than not, it's just your own mind chatter at you, and your meditation will seem fruitless. What should you do then? He says, my advice is, listen. What does your mind keep chattering to you about? If it says you didn't do the wash, either get up and do it or move through that thought. If you really want to meditate and see God, you will. The only thing many people get out of meditating is calluses on their bottom, and maybe not even that, because they won't sit still long enough. If this describes you, your meditation has taught you at least one useful thing. how not to do it. If 25 or 30 years of study have not brought you anything but this, you might want to consider a change. Thinking you cannot change is not even horizontal thinking. It is perpendicular, and it is headed straight down.
Mm.
So I found that really interesting.
That's very interesting.
Because when you meditate, the ego wants to feel like it has accomplished something after sitting there all the time. But why give up your perceptuous attentions to your ego? That will just create defeat, anxiety. So, you know, choose wisely where you will place your thoughts and your actions.
Choose wisely where you place your thoughts and actions. Wow. Wow, that's so powerful. That's really good.
Because that's what we do have choice of, you know.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
We have no control over people, places, and things. But we do have control of choosing our thoughts and our actions,
mm-hmm.
and being responsible, taking responsibility for our actions.
Well, thank you, Sherry. We really love that. Thank you. And we appreciate you talking about the topic of love this week. It's one of the best things to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Love
we'll have
love.
More of that.
We have one of our guests calling, so I'm going to bring them in now. Good morning. Welcome to the Good News Show.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How
Good
are you?
Good morning.
Thank you for getting up so early and being with us this morning.
You're welcome. You're welcome. It's a pleasure to have me on the show.
So tell us, we're very excited for our audience to hear about your place because it's very unique and it's here in Miami, Florida, so tell us a little bit about yourself and what you have.
Yeah, my name is Jorge Garcia. I'm the co-owner of Solely Organic Ice Cream. This is a certified, 100% certified organic ice cream shop in South Miami. We offer a no-sugar ice cream product sweetened with agave. Agave nectar is a low glycemic sweetener suitable for diabetics. I don't know if you heard of agave. Or have used agave in any of your sweetening agents, but it's it's a very tasteless sweetener, which works well with the ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we love agave. I stopped eating sugar and Splenda and all the preservatives, and I switched to agave, and I love it. I put it in my coffee or tea or. You know, or if I make any
hot cereals
yes,
and
great.
Tea.
It works so well with the ice cream. I've been experimenting, with it, creating the product that we have. It's a rich, creamy ice cream. It's full of intense flavors. You know, there's no additives, preservatives. It's ice cream in its purest form, the way it used to be, the way it's intended to be. We're just going back to the basics.
Right. Well, that's what we all need to hear. That we need that. It's a different way of thinking about things. And agave does not create that sugar craving that sugar does.
Yes, yes, and it's interesting how we see the mothers that bring the kids to the shop who love it because their kids don't get that sugar high.
Right.
So mothers love it. And, we have so many favorite flavors, too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what flavors you've tried when you were at the shop, but have you had a raspberry pomegranate acai sorbet?
No, I have. I think I had the peanut butter.
Oh, the peanut butter chocolate. Oh, my God. That was flying out the door.
I know.
You know, it's organic peanut butter with the rich chocolate, and it's like it's an exciting flavor that people just can't get enough of that. We also offer, like the sorbets, the raspberry pomegranate acai. It's full of antioxidants. It goes well with the chocolate, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
So I can have two scoops.
Yes, it goes well. Actually, vanilla also with the raspberry. It's delicious. And, our coconut ice cream is also very popular. People love coconut down here.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you tried our dairy-free products. I don't know if you had any of that.
No, I don't think we did.
We have ginger, cinnamon. You know, the ginger is freshly grated ginger in there. It's another favorite of our customers. Very popular.
Mm-hmm.
And how long have you been open?
We've been open 2.5 years.
Fabulous.
Yes.
Did you have a espresso ice cream or something with coffee?
Yes. Yes.
Tell us about that.
Yes, it's not called coffee like most ice creams. They use bitter coffee. This is espresso, organic fair trade espresso. It's decaf, by the way, so that everyone can have it. We crush espresso beans in it, too. So it's full of flavor.
Mm.
Oh, that's going to be my next one, I think.
Yeah, you should try having an apple. On our menu, we have an affogato. I don't know if you heard what that is. It's just vanilla ice cream with a shot of espresso, some organic whipped cream, and chocolate-covered espresso beans. It is wonderful.
That sounds heavenly.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Now, do you have other desserts in addition to ice cream?
Yes. Well, we make ice cream cakes to order. We bake gluten-free cookies and chocolate cake. We do chocolate chip cookies, pecan cookies. Those are gluten-free. And we're coming up with a whole line of different dessert products now. We try to do, you know, of course it's sugar-free. And we really push the gluten-free. We have a lot of people who don't do the wheat and gluten. And they're very tasty, very delicious.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't even know that there's no gluten in it.
Mm.
And we also make granola brittle, which is the only one I've known where it's sugar-free.
Mm-hmm.
And it also does very well. And we do ice cream cakes to order.
That's great to know about the granola.
Oh, it's delicious, yeah. Like I said, granola out there is all made with honey and, you know, sugars. This is totally made with brown rice syrup and agave.
Beautiful. I love it.
Yeah.
Since we've gone on this path, it's just been a whole opening up to, you know, places like yours that are opened and just another way. And, you know, you have to retrain your palate. So many people are used to that sweet sugar taste. And after you retrain your palate and you go to something like yours, I can't eat regular ice cream anymore.
Yeah,
it's just not the same.
It's funny when people try the strawberry ice cream, they're like, oh, my God, it tastes like strawberries. People out there are so used to having some sort of artificial strawberry flavor or something, but it's interesting how people's reaction to it when they say it tastes like, you know, what it is. And it's what it is. It's pure ice cream, pure flavor.
It's pure ice cream flavor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
no artificial ingredients.
Yeah. And people are so used to eating, you know, not just ice cream, just so many things that our palate has changed in having artificial flavors.
Mm.
Right. Well, we were so used to eating processed foods and things.
Mm-hmm.
So this is really great.
So we have about 1 minute left, and we would like for you to give our listeners your contact information and website that they can learn more about what you have.
Right. Our website is www.solyorganic.com. That's S-O-L-I, Solely Organic. We're located on US 1 and Sunset, right across the street from Deli Lane. You know where that is. Most people know where that is,
mm-hmm.
Right in the heart of downtown Miami. We also, you know, do ship our ice cream anywhere, whoever wants it.
Okay, good.
And dry ice. We ship it on dry ice, and we also ship our cookies and granola.
Okay.
And we're planning to open. Yes. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
So if our listeners who are not in Miami want to order ice cream, should they go to the website and order it through the website?
Yeah, well, we don't have a commerce site yet up. We're working on that, but you could call our number at the shop, and we could take the order from there. And
you
our number is on our
website.
You
want to repeat that number? Oh.
Yeah, our phone number is 305-663-9399. And, again, our website is www.solyorganic.com.
Well, that's terrific. We want to thank you for coming on to our show this morning. And listeners, there you have it. This is Jorge Garcia with Soli Organic, and we encourage you to call and order some ice cream. It's the best ice cream we've had.
Really? Thank you, Jorge.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Okay.
You're
welcome.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, I'm in the mood for ice cream now.
Any
6:30 in the morning.
Any time is a good time for ice cream.
I think of their shop and I get a smile on my face. We have our next guest who's calling in, so let me see if I can bring him in. This is Peter Savone.
Peter.
Good morning. Welcome to the Good News Show.
Good morning, ladies. How are you today?
Good morning, Peter. It's good to have
great.
You with us. Thank you.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Good. So, Peter, we would like for you to just introduce yourself to our listeners and tell them a little bit about your background.
Sure. I am a classically trained chef. I graduated from the Culinary Institute of America back in 1993. And the way I like to put it is that I was armed with the knowledge of turning any once living creature into what would be considered a gourmet meal. And what happened a few years after working in Manhattan, I worked at some of the finest restaurants in Manhattan, like the River Cafe and La Cobasque and the Water Club and San Domenico. And what happened for me is basically just became an epiphany. One day I was working in the kitchen and I was roasting veal bones for a veal stock, and it really just struck me how archaic it seemed that we were nourishing ourselves with once living creatures. And for me, that was a huge turning point in my life. I think a lot of people come to veganism, and that's I guess what we're going to be getting into. Maybe I should have introduced that first, but I think people usually come into it from either a health standpoint, and generally in the form of that they're having health problems, or a moral one. And for me, it kind of seemed to be both, because being raised on the standard American diet, I really didn't start having health problems until my late 20s, early 30s. And it's interesting, one of my mentors, Dr. Fred Bishi, this amazing naturopath and chiropractor out of New York, he said, you know, the body is an amazing machine, and it will keep you alive, but at the cost of vitality and longevity. So, and everyone's genetic makeup is different. So in my case, it was the end of my 20s, rather, and I started experiencing some health problems. And so for me, the health and the moral aspects intersected, and I never looked back. I've been concentrating on solely vegan, truly health supportive cuisine for the last 12 years since becoming vegan. And I worked at a bunch of places in Manhattan, the Angelica Kitchen, the Organic Grill, Quintessence. And then about 6 years ago, I moved here, and I've been doing a lot of private consulting.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we hear so much about, like you said, the vegan. We hear so much about vegan now. And I think that one of the first things that happened for me was when I read the book called Skinny Bitch.
Mm-hmm.
And that was quite interesting. It was a real mind-opener, the way they introduce and put things, like, very real about, you know, look at what you're eating. And tell our listeners a little bit about what vegan is, because some people just don't know.
Some people are confused with vegetarian, vegan, or macrobiotic diets.
Right. And well, as far as veganism is concerned, veganism is abstaining essentially from all animal products, and that includes dairy, eggs, and even honey. And not always, but most usually, it will also include abstaining from using animal products in your daily life. For instance, products that have been tested on, cosmetics that have been tested on animals. I remember when I first became vegan, I went to purchase a car, and it took them about an extra month and a half to find one without leather. So, and I don't wear leather. I don't use leather products in my home. So Mm-hmm. And vegetarianism, you can fall into a category of ovo-lacto, and that's essentially what vegetarianism is that you're not eating animal flesh, but you do consume animal byproducts, such as eggs and dairy products.
Mm-hmm.
What I find interesting is that there are a lot of people who consider themselves vegetarians, but they say, oh, you know, I'm a vegetarian, but I eat fish, or I'm a vegetarian, but I eat chicken, and that's
right.
not really,
right.
you know, a vegetarian.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then macrobiotics is a system of a healing system of food that was created by Michio Kuchi,
mm-hmm.
and it has a lot to do with balancing energies between foods. It is pretty much, for the most part, vegetarian, except that they do incorporate fish and I believe eggs. I'm not too sure on the macrobiotic system, but. You know, really, that's the difference, is that veganism, you know, absolutely no animal products whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting go ahead, I'm sorry.
Are there substitutes for, like, cheese and dairy in vegan at all?
Yes, there are, and it's interesting, too. When I first became vegan, and this is only, you know, this is a little bit more than a decade ago, there were not that many... analogs, which you would call, or, you know, meat and dairy substitutes or replacements. But now there's the market is full of so many different types of wheat-based products, gluten-based products that, you know, that closely replicate the taste and texture of meat. And, you know, but it's interesting. I use them, as I think a lot of vegans do in the beginning, to help you transition from the standard American diet, but what's important as far as you know, continuing health is that you wean yourself off of those products as quickly as possible, and you know, opt for a much healthier whole food diet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whole grains, whole vegetables. Not, I mean, because you know, some of the products out there are absolutely delicious, but they don't offer much in the way of nutrition. So.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of unhealthy vegans and vegetarians out there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you think about it, you can eat, you know, you know, as a vegetarian, you could eat ice cream and pizza all day long, and you're a vegetarian, but your diet's not going to be healthy. So,
right.
And,
right.
And the same thing with veganism, too.
Now, is tofu a product for vegan?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Tofu.
Tofu. That's been a double-edged sword as far as I'm concerned. Tofu is for the listeners that are not aware of it. It's a soy product. It's basically very similar to the process of cheese making. You basically boil soybeans. You create a milk out of it. Then you introduce a coagulant. It's usually calcium chloride or Nagari, and that. That forms a curd, and then the curd is pressed. It's delicious. It's high in vegetable protein, but what happens is that it's also very high in phytoestrogen, which is converted into estrogen in the bloodstream, which is not good for both men or women, because high levels of phytoestrogen and estrogen in the bloodstream have been linked to cancer. And I think what's happened here in this country is that a lot of studies were done in the 70s and 80s, and they were looking at areas that had very low incidences of certain types of cancer. And they looked at the Japanese diet, which includes tofu and soy products for the most part. And they had very low incidences of breast cancer and prostate cancer and osteoporosis and things of that nature. So I think what's common here in the States, and I guess in the Western world for the most part, is that if a little bit is good, a lot must be really good. And that, unfortunately, is not the case.
Mm-hmm.
What they found, further studies reveal that a lot of the soy products that are consumed in Japan a very small complement to the meal.
Hello? Hello?
Okay, yeah, I was getting some interference on this end.
Yeah, can you repeat that last statement?
A lot of studies afterwards have shown that the amount of soy in the Japanese diet is very small, and a lot of it's usually fermented soy in the form of soy sauce and miso and things of that nature. And that the body can seem to handle a little bit better. So tofu, and that's another thing too, what people don't realize is that tofu is a very processed food, not in the same respect as, you know, like potato chips when we say processed food. But, you know, you're taking, you know, the edamame that you would have, you're taking that soybean, and you are putting it through a bunch of different processes in order to get this food. So it can be very hard on the digestion. And it is a mucus, you know, an acid-forming and mucus-forming food in the body. So I usually tell people to, you know, especially as they're transitioning, is that, you know, use the soy and use it as a transition food, but try not to get stuck on that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tough because it can, you know, from a chef's standpoint, from my standpoint, it's an amazing food because it's basically like a sponge just waiting for you to, you know, to create and shape it. And there's a whole lot of different really cool textural things you can do with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I try to stay, you know, away from it as much as possible and just try to opt for, you know, more green vegetables and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm glad you cleared that up because that's something that's been on my mind because we have been transitioning also. And that's one of the things I was like so happy I could, you know, eat that. And then I started hearing things. So now it's just I'll use it every occasionally. So what do you in your preparing, what would you suggest? I mean, do you go more towards noodles or vegetables and a rice noodle, or what would be a day of food in a vegan life?
Well, and it's interesting now too that the vegan diet is now even being further broken down or further classified into cooked vegan and raw vegan. So it really depends on what route you want to go. I worked at Hippocrates for a year. I had the great fortune to work under Brian Clement there, and they opt for an 80% raw, 20% cooked diet for optimal health. And I think that they really have a formula there that works. But I would say for someone transitioning, I would go with I try to stay away from a lot of the highly allergenic items, too. For instance, I think wheat, I don't think it's a matter. I think everyone on the planet has some kind of an allergy to wheat. I think it's just more, some people just display more severe symptoms, you know, which would be, at one end would be celiacs, which would be the most severe case. And then on the lower end of the spectrum, like myself, I notice a perceptible change in my mood when I eat wheat, but I don't have the same, you know, typical responses that most people do. So I try to stay away from wheat. So as far as like doing noodles, there are a bunch of really nice rice pastas that are on the market. There are some interesting quinoa and corn blends. Quinoa is an amazing, it's cooked like a grain, but it's actually a seed. Super high in protein and amino acids and calcium and things of that nature. So there are quite a few different pasta substitutes out there that I would opt for. And as far as grains, I also try to stay away from white rice. I think brown rice is the best of all the rices. But if you can avoid the brown rice altogether, that's even better. The grains that I usually suggest for when I have clients that have health challenges are buckwheat, amaranth, millet, and quinoa. Those are the four alkalizing grains, which means that they don't produce an inflammatory response in the body by causing acid and mucus formation in the body, and they're absolutely delicious. I mean, people, you know, buckwheat is like, you know, for or kasha, as it's known otherwise. So many delicious things you can make from buckwheat and quinoa and millet and amaranth. You can make breakfast cereals. You can make you know, savory croquettes. You can even make desserts out of them too. So that's what I would opt for as far as the grains. And then as far as your vegetables, I mean, as long as you're keeping them mostly raw, I think that, you know, the sky's the limit, whatever you really like. I mean, but try to get as much greens in your diet as possible, whether it's in the form of a salad, And if you're cooking them, the best thing to do is just lightly steam them. I know, you know, especially coming from an Italian-American background, you know, everything is sautéed in garlic and oil. And, you know, there's so much talked about, oh, you know, as long as you use a really healthy oil. But there, a lot of studies have shown that you could take the best extra virgin olive oil on the planet. You could crush the olives yourself and extract the oil right there. As soon as you start to heat that oil, you turn the molecules of the oil from an essential fatty acid, which is what our body needs to, you know, for proper brain function, nerve function, lubricates the joints. You take that essential fatty acid and you're basically rearranging the molecular structure and turning it into a trans fat. And there's so much talked about today about, you know, trans fats and how bad they are, and the government now has gotten involved in an attempt to try to make the food supply healthier. And that's something too that I'd like to point out to the listeners is that there's so much now about trans fats. On a lot of snack foods, you'll see, you know, contains no trans fats, and that unfortunately is another lie. Basically, what they're saying is that they're not using trans fats or hydrogenated fats to start with. However, most chips and things of that nature are cooked over 350 degrees, and at that point, the fat becomes a trans fat. So I think a lot of people out there are unwittingly reaching for snack foods that say, oh, no trans fats. Unless it's baked, it's a trans fat.
It turns into a trans fat.
That's
really good to know that label is misleading.
Right. So the best thing that I would, you know, that I suggest to people is you just, you know, for instance, if you wanted some nice broccoli rabe, for instance, and, you know, you're used to having it sautéed in garlic and oil, is just to, you know, go out and get one of those very inexpensive but really nice bamboo steamers, steam the broccoli rabe to the doneness that you want, and then I just, you know, put it in a bowl, crush some fresh garlic over it, take a really, really nice extra virgin olive oil and drizzle some on, and, you know, season it to taste. And do it that way. And it's you have to retrain your taste buds in a lot of ways. But the transition, I think, is important for your health. And I think one of the reasons why I think you see veganism now becoming so, you know, popular now.
We just read that Ellen's wedding was all vegan.
Ellen DeGeneres, yes.
Yeah, Ellen DeGeneres. Ellen.
Yeah, and there's so many stars out there, you know, Hollywood stars that are doing this, and athletes and musicians. And I really think it's, you know, just like I came, you know, to this epiphany in my life 12 years ago, I think that it's starting to happen with a lot more people now on the planet. And it's a whole part of the raising of the consciousness on the planet and people just waking up and wanting to respect their bodies and wanting to respect the planet. I mean, people don't really understand the amount of resources that are wasted going into producing food for the standard American diet.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of water that's used to raise the grain for the cattle, to clean the cattle. I mean, we are depleting our fresh water supplies just to go into feeding and raising millions and hundreds of millions of animals raised for food.
Mm-hmm.
And then what's interesting about it, and it's crazy when you think about it, all the waste that comes from these animals ends up getting into the water supply and fouling up, you know, the other areas of the fresh water that we have. So I think that that's really what it's, you know, where it's going, is that people realize that, you know, that this is a better way, not only for their bodies, but for the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So what about, you know, people that are used to this regular American diet and they want a sandwich, or they're into their breakfasts? What's a alternative that you would suggest?
Well, of course, you know, eating bread is still vegan, and there's a lot of cool different things you can do. You can grill vegetables, grilled portobello. Mushrooms are a great, has a meat-like texture. And like I touched upon earlier, there are a lot of transition foods. There are these really cool deli meats that, you know, I beg anyone to tell me that, you know, once it's inside a sandwich, that they can't tell that they're not eating bologna or turkey or something of that nature. So And as far as you know, the big breakfasts are concerned, traditional American breakfast, there's bacon substitutes, sausage substitutes. You can take tofu and make it into like a do a tofu scramble. So yeah, there are plenty of options out there that are still vegan. But again, it really people have to want to change. I mean, if someone had told me, 12 years ago or 13 years ago when I was, when I was a chef at working the line at the River Cafe, that I was going to become vegan one day, I would have laughed at them. I wasn't ready for that. I was part of the You Kill It, I'll Cook It Club. Mm-hmm. I was cooking things like, bison, alligator, bear, antelope, you name it. It was whatever they brought in. I was more than happy to cook, but you have to want to change, and it was not only a healthy choice for me to make in terms of regaining my vitality and my youth, but it was an extremely heart-opening experience. I always considered myself to be very connected and very grounded and a very loving person, and I had no idea how much more I could be, and a lot of that happened through becoming vegan. Mm-hmm. And, and it's interesting too. A lot of times I point to Albert Einstein. He's one of the smartest people that have lived, and especially in our in the modern era. Mm-hmm. And he was he's been quoted first of all, and it's interesting too because he talks about both the spiritual aspect of veganism and the environmental impact. But he was noted as saying, I know I'm paraphrasing, but nothing will benefit human health and increase the chances for survival on Earth as much as the evolution to a vegetarian diet. So he knew back in the 30s that he saw the way with the Industrial Revolution happening and the population explosion. He knew that at some point that this was going to become an untenable situation, mm-hmm. with factory farming and everything else like that. And then he was also heard to say that, and I'm going to find the quote here somewhere. He said, and I quote directly on this, "Although I have been prevented by outward circumstances from observing a strictly vegetarian diet, I have long been an adherent to the cause in principle. Besides agreeing with the aims of vegetarianism for aesthetic and moral reasons, it is my view that a vegetarian manner of living by its purely physical effect on the human temperament, would most beneficially influence the lot of mankind." And I think that points to, like I said, that heart-opening experience is that, a lot of the typical aggression, started to kind of, wither away, and I just became more connected to people around me, and it was interesting. I had opportunities to leave the profession of cooking, but I think the veganism really just helped me make the connection with food and putting the love into the food and being mm-hmm. able to share that love with other people. And I'm certainly not making a judgment on it because I grew up with my grandma and my mom preparing animal products with love, and you could certainly feel that love in there. But I just think that, energetically speaking, you're dealing with something that was killed, and in a lot of cases, tortured for the most part, mm-hmm. as far as veal calves and things like that. In fact, I just was on a website the other day. Someone pointed it out to me. It was for a salmon company, and it said, "Salmon caught so fresh that you still see the fear in their beady little eyes."
Oh,
and,
wow.
It's like, I think that's what's going on, is that, a lot of what Einstein was saying about, affecting the temperament of people is that you're no longer consuming death. You're no longer consuming the energy, that's on a spiritual level. On a mm-hmm. physical level, they've already proven that, like, for instance, when a cow is going to slaughter and they know it's going down, they see the cow in front of them being shot in the head. The fear that goes through them releases all these harmful and toxic hormones that go right into the muscles of the cow. So it's slaughtered, and people consume it, and they're consuming that fear. Not only
that
on a
fear.
Spiritual, energetic level, but also on a physical level. So it's been an interesting trip, and I really just love sharing it with people. And it's interesting you mentioned the book Skinny Bitch. When I first became vegan, I was very, very adamant and very vocal and almost very angry. Like, you know, my buddies and I, we used to consider ourselves like these, like vegan mafia or like these vegan terrorists that we would, you know, we would get in people's faces and say, listen, you know, you are eating a dead cow. Don't call it a hamburger. Don't call it a steak.
Right.
Don't call it what it is. And I found that, you know, as I matured and as I grew older, that, you know, that kind of, it kind of mellowed out a little bit. And it's very interesting that I find now, like, for instance, I was dating this girl for a while, and she had been vegetarian, but she had struggled with the whole vegan thing. And only after reading Skinny Bitch did she say, like, I don't know why it took, you know, a book so angrily written, but it started to make her realize what was going on. So, however you come to it, it's interesting. And there's certainly a place for that, and I think that sometimes the public needs to be shocked out of, shocked into that to see what goes on. I mean, there's a famous saying, I think it's Peter Singer, is that, talking about that, you know, if slaughterhouses had windows, we'd all be vegetarians. If you really saw how the food was, you know, how the animals were treated and how the animals are slaughtered, you wouldn't eat it. And
you
I
wouldn't
think
eat it.
Yeah, I think that's, for me, I think being a chef and being, you know, in the kitchens and, you know, you go to a nice restaurant and you sit down and you order a lobster tail and it's beautifully presented. Meanwhile, as a chef, I'm in the back, you know, taking a case of, you know, 30 lobsters they're all living and throwing them into a huge kettle of boiling water. You know, people go and order, a nice chicken breast, and the chef is back there, you know, with their hands in, you know, 400 pounds of chicken breast.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that people sometimes lose that connection between what's on their plate and where it came from. And I think for me as a chef, being a chef expedited my evolution to veganism.
Mm-hmm.
That every day I was forced to make that connection, like. And like I said, it happened one day when I was roasting veal bones. I had 600 pounds of veal bones that I was roasting off for a huge veal stock. And I just stopped and I said, this is 600 pounds. They're like, this was all part of a bunch of baby calves. And I started figuring, like, how many calves it could have been. And
mm-hmm.
once I made that connection, that's what was like a lightning bolt that went right through me. And
I know one of the hardest things for me to be giving up is cheese.
Mm-hmm. It was hard for me.
Yeah, it is. That's the hardest. But it's really been such an education. We first started this journey. We went to the healthy, holistic, healthy cruise where Mishu Kuchis was there, and his learnings and teachings, and many people that were lecturers. And I never knew that fabulous little cruise was going to change my life and not look at things the same again. But it's just whatever takes you there.
Yeah, I think along the way there's been a disconnect with food and where it comes from. And for years, people aren't even aware of where their meat comes from, or they don't make the association that it came from a live animal. And if they're told that, they can't even relate to it. They take the words for what they are and just continue to eat it. And, I do think it does take an eye-opening experience to wake them up and realize that eating something that's been killed, is you're not in harmony with nature, and we are nature. We're a part of it.
Absolutely.
So I really I enjoy speaking with you this morning, and I think our listeners have enjoyed it. You have a world of education to share, and we do appreciate you coming on the show and sharing it.
Well,
I love your voice, Peter.
Oh,
you have a radio voice.
I actually had a radio show when I went to Fordham University at WFUV in the Bronx.
I can see why.
I enjoy it. But yeah, thank you so much. I mean, it's any opportunity I get to you know, just to share my experience. And it was interesting how you shared your experience. I love getting around with a group of people and having them share their stories, because they're all different and they're all amazing, and something can be learned from all of them.
Right, and I'll tell you one thing that somebody had told me that made it easier for me is they said, sometimes it doesn't happen right away. Sometimes it has taken time. You know, you start a little, then you fall back, and then you know, and you realize you start eating food again, and then you realize what it, you know, that you're lucky you get back to basics.
Well, I want to thank the both of you for being on. We have about 20 seconds left. So, Sherry, I'm going to ask you to read the weekly mantra.
I
will.
I want to say, live simply, love generously, care deeply, and speak kindly. And I thank you all for listening, and have a great week.
And thank you for being with us, Peter.
Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye now.